have been listening to some of our favorite segments here on the Dory Monson Show. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to, you know, grab a little bit of a holiday weekend here. And we will be back with you Monday at high noon with a brand new show. And I'm not going anywhere forever. Thank you for being a great listener here for Cairo Radio and on the Dory Monson Show. Well, I told you early in this week that one of the things I wanted to do was talk to my friends who've had vastly different worldviews than me. And one of those most cherished friends is former Seahawk Ray Roberts, who is part of our Seahawks pre- and post-game coverage. And most importantly, helped me take the Shorecrest Scots to the 2011 State Regionals. Ray Roberts joins me here on the Dory Monson Show. Good afternoon, Ray. Good to talk to you.
You too, Dory. And I love that that we will forever be connected, and that you always make sure that people know that I did play a small role in getting our getting our team to that point of the playoffs. You know, Bree and
India, Bree, Vicky, and, yeah.
India.
Janie, Allison, Oni, yeah, I can name them all. Yeah. You went on our sister station 710 on Monday, and you were as emotional, and like me, I'm a very emotional man, and I know that you are too, right? But that was as emotional as I've heard you. It was a depth of emotion that really struck me, and it struck a lot of people. I mean, it's gone crazy viral, but in case my listeners haven't heard that, just tell me where that came from when you were talking about just how you're feeling right now.
Yeah, so, you know, when all of this stuff happened, and I've only watched the video of George Floyd one time, and that's when it first came out.
That's more than enough. I mean, that's the most nauseating thing you can ever see.
And it just hit me. It has hit me, and it has hit a lot of people a different way. And so when Danny asked me on Sunday to come, you know, if I would come on the show, I wasn't sure that I would be able to do it because my feelings and emotions and things were all over the place. And all I could think about was my grandfather and just the stuff that he was going through. And I have pictures on my house of my grandfather and my dad holding signs about police brutality. And so I was thinking about how all of that has connected all three of us. And so then I was trying to then put into words and paint a picture for people. Because sometimes, Dory, I think that people get so caught up in the moment. And when I say people, I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying people get caught up in the moment and they forget like what the foundation of some of this stuff is, because for one thing, they don't do a whole lot of teaching anymore around slavery and the civil rights movement and stuff like that in schools. So people are getting less and less educated on the foundation of these things. And there's even some people that are saying like, we shouldn't be talking about those things in school. We should get past it. And it's like, well, you need to be reminded of what it's like and what it was and what it's in some respects, what it still is. And so as I started reading, well, actually it started before I started, I was just super emotional because I was appreciative of the opportunity because not many, you know, people, not many black guys have that platform and that opportunity. And so I thought it was important for me to do right by the opportunity. So that's one reason, you know, me, I don't normally prepare a whole lot of stuff to say, I just kind of go off the top. No. But I figured if I went off the top, I might miss what I'm trying to communicate. So I just kind of prepared something so that I can be right by the moment. So then as I started reading it, like just all of these emotions from my life where I feel like I've suppressed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
'Cause I've experienced racism since my earliest memory.
Tell me about that, Ray, because, you know, that's the thing that I think – you know, most defines our differences. And so tell me, you know, give me some specifics of what you experienced as a young man growing up in Virginia and here in Seattle and in Detroit.
Yeah, so I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, which is up in the western North Carolina, up in the mountains. And we used to have, like, our Christmas Day, our Christmas parade would happen, like, some way a couple days before Thanksgiving. And then every year, a couple days after Thanksgiving, the KKK would have a rally and march through our town the same way the Christmas parade did. And so you have, as a little kid, you're watching people with hoods over their heads carrying burning crosses and weapons and all of this stuff, and they're marching through the town. And you, only thing you know is that those people don't like you. And so then that impacts how you move about the city all the time. You know that there's certain places you can't be at certain times of the day. You know there's certain places you can't go and be by yourself. Yeah. Me and my dad used to fish a lot. And so we would go to all these little small lakes and things in and around Asheville. But we knew that we could only fish there for like a couple hours, because if we were there too long, then we were going to be confined. Limit through that town was 25. My dad would drive 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Because you didn't want to get pulled over. You didn't want to get stopped because crazy stuff has happened. You know, like I told the story about me being on my bicycle. So my neighborhood was this really like poor neighborhood in the middle of a larger white neighborhood. So there were boundaries, right? And so my cousin and I were riding our bikes one night during the summer. And we rode past this gas station where a bunch of white guys were just kind of sitting in the parking lot drinking and doing whatever they do. And they started calling us like names and stuff. And so my cousin, who's a little bit older than me, said something back. And then all of a sudden, all these dudes were chasing us. And so we just took off on our bicycles to get to the boundary part to where we could be safe. And right as we got across the boundary, I hit a pothole and crashed my bicycle. And I broke my wrist. And so I couldn't start the first couple games of the football season in ninth grade. And really the only reason I was able to play the rest of the season is I cut the cast off and just taped my wrist up and played the rest of the season. And then they had to reset my wrist at the end of the season.
That sounds like you. That really sounds like you right there. And then you also talked about, because, you know, then you get drafted by the Seahawks and you know, you're coming out to supposedly enlightened Seattle, progressive place, not nearly as engulfed in racism. But you said you even experienced that when you lived over in on the East Side.
Yeah. There was one particular time where I was probably a block from my house, and not to like, you know, pump myself up, but I would imagine that my house is probably the nicest house on the block. And, you know, we built the house.
Yeah.
And I got pulled over, and, you know, I wasn't speeding or doing anything. I couldn't figure out why I was being pulled over. And the guy came up to the car. Obviously, I had a nice car, tinted windows, all that kind of stuff. I rolled the window down, and he goes, "Hey, are you lost?" And I'm like, "What do you mean, am I lost?" And he goes, "I just was wondering why you're driving through the neighborhood." I'm like, "Cause I live right there. Like, that's my house. That big house, the biggest house in this neighborhood, is mine."
Hmm.
And so he had no reason to pull me over.
Right.
Like, he had profiled my car, and then once I rolled down the window, he profiled me and wanted to know why I was there. Like it wasn't because, if he had said, "Hey, man, like, your tail light is out," or whatever it is, and, you know, just want to make sure your tail light is out, and you know, something like that, that would have been different. But his only questioning was, basically, why am I here? Why are you here? I'm like, because I live here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Dory, like, I'm a big dude, you know, I'm 6'6", you know, 300 pounds. And even when I came here, you know, I had way more muscle than I have now. And so as you're walking down the street and people are clutching their purses and crossing the street and like being super uncomfortable with me being behind them, you know, all of that stuff is rooted in some racist attitudes. You know what I'm saying? Like I was over at the U Village one time over by UW and was walking, just, you know, shopping like everybody else. And this lady was so nervous about me being behind her. She literally stopped so I can go past her. And then she crossed the street and we ended up in the same store. Yeah. and it was just like, it was stuff like that. One, Chris Warren, when he won the Russian title for the AFC, I think my second year or something, he gave us Rolex watches. And I wanted to get my name engraved on the back of it. And I took it to a store in the Bellevue Mall. And I said, hey, like, I want to get this, my name engraved on this watch. And they were making me prove that I had purchased the watch.
But so ironic when you talk about people crossing the street from you, when we've been out together and we've traveled together a lot, you are like the friendliest human being I know. When we're at airports, you talk to everybody. When we're on the plane, you talk to everybody. And that's one of many tragedies of this. Hey, do you have five more minutes for me, Ray? Can you stick
around?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. All right, Ray Roberts, my dear friend with us. Ray has had an incredible comments that you can hear on our sister station, 710 ESPN's website. Ray, the thing that struck me the most, because the thing that I think connects you and me the most, is being fathers. And, that's what we talk about. And I'm getting teary-eyed thinking about asking you this question, because you talked about, with such emotion, how fearful you are when your sons are out at night.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, like I said, my son, I have three sons, by the way. But my one son, Slade, is the one that's out and about all the time. And he's, you know, 6'8", he's 300 pounds, super imposing looking dude. Like, he's so big now, Dory, that, like, people don't even notice me when I'm walking with him. Like, they just look at him and go, like, they just go like, man, there's a double door walking down the street.
Yeah. Well, now you know what it feels like to be me walking next to you.
Yeah. But he's also like a, you know, he's probably one of the smartest people I know. People expect him to be a football player, but he's never been interested in being a football player. But I also just know that, like, the way I was approached because of the car I was driving and things, and maybe it looking out of place in a neighborhood where an officer has a vision of what the traffic should look like there, or what the people might should look like there, and what is suspicious and stuff. He could easily be in harm's way because of that. And because he's a big dude, and he's going to overpower or oversize most of the police officers that are going to pull him over. Like, the slightest little misunderstanding, or if my son decides to have pushback around anything, you know, that's going on, then there's a chance that he doesn't make it home. And that is a serious concern of mine. Like, I had a friend of mine say, like, well, can you name anybody that's ever been bullied by the, brutalized by the police or killed by the police? And I was like, you know what? Like, I can't say that I know anyone that's been killed by the police. But if you go back to the 19s, whatevers, police brutality has been a part of the history of this country forever. And so it's not about the one police brutality or murder in the moment. It's about the culmination of all of that.
Here's what I wrestle with, Ray, since, you know, we're just having an honest conversation. I have no idea what it's like to walk in your skin and to see Klan hoods when you're a kid in North Carolina and to have people chase you and you break your wrist because of the color. I don't know what that's like. And I absolutely understand why that would impact the prism through which you view the world forever. But you know me. I'm a math guy. I'm a stats guy. And I've got a Washington Post database in front of me. And in 2019 in America, 9 unarmed blacks were shot and killed by police. 19 unarmed whites were shot and killed by police. And, you know, the demonization of cops to me is exaggerated, but I understand why you view the world the way you do. But I want to believe that things are getting better, and the stats, this is a Washington Post database, the stats back me up. And I'm not sure the cops are as horrible You know, we had a Seattle councilwoman 2 days ago who said a black man is killed every day in America by police. And why would somebody say that when there's no factual basis to it? And that's what I wrestle with all this.
Yeah. The only thing I can say about that, Dory, is that the data doesn't speak to the trauma.
No, I understand that. I mean, that's why I said what I said.
So what I'm saying is you're trying to use a data point from this current, you know, recent time. And I'm talking to you about a trauma that has been a part of our history from the moment we stepped foot in this country.
Right.
Data doesn't speak to trauma. You can have a traumatic event when you're 5 years old, and you can have a similar event when you're 55 years old that's happening to someone else. And the chemicals that are released in your body from trauma can be released the same way when you're 55 years old. And you have to then figure out a way to tell yourself that it is not currently happening to you. And so it's almost like I had a friend one time that was having an issue with his girlfriend. And I was trying to talk him through it and trying to figure out what was going on. And he's an engineering dude. And he said, but Ray, you don't understand you don't have all the data points. And I said, well, that's what the problem is. Because you're talking about people's feelings and emotions, and you're talking about data points. If you want to have a relationship with a computer, then go do that. Because the computer understands data points. You put it in, it kicks something out. There's no trauma, emotion, hurt, love. None of that comes from the computer. But for people, you're talking about feelings.
You're talking about exactly.
And then what people are responding to isn't the data point in the moment. It's the trauma of a lifetime. And you don't have to experience what someone else has been like, someone else being brutalized. You don't have to be the person being brutalized. Just your experience of it is traumatizing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
These are exactly the kinds of conversations we need to have, because I agree with you 100%. If somebody just looks at data without trying to have some empathy for what shaped your worldview and that of your brothers and sisters, then we're missing the story. I think too many people just swing from extremes
I agree with that.
Instead of being like you and me, ebony and ivory. Yeah. There you go.
People live in the extremes and argue from those places. So everything is so black and white. But like people always say that the numbers don't lie, but the numbers do lie. Right. Because you can manipulate numbers to say and mean a lot of different things. But then other people are into the storytelling, and the storytelling doesn't tell the whole story either. It's when you have the data and the narrative is when you have a clear picture of what's going on. So if you just live in one place, then you're going to be missing the mark somehow.
Amen.
And so the numbers without the narrative can be very misleading. But then the narrative without the numbers can be empty. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
So it takes both of them to paint what the real true picture is.
This has been awesome, Ray. You know, I love you. I love your kids, and I love conversations like this. And you did, you expressed everything just so well. I always learn stuff when I talk to you.
Well, thanks for giving me the time, my man.
Ray, take care. I'll hopefully see you soon, okay?
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
All right. Ray Roberts from our Seahawks pre- and post-game coverage, and a dear, dear friend of mine. All right, lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, glad you're hanging out with us this afternoon here on the Dory Monson Show. And it is a holiday weekend. Thanks for tuning in with us, and enjoy some of our favorites. Well, some of Nicole's favorite segments from the recent past here on the Dory Monson Show. Brock Huer joining us from parts unknown. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Dory. Good afternoon. Is anything going on?
No, that's pretty quiet in the world these days, Brock. One of the most disturbing things that I've seen is I called you last night.
Uh-huh.
You picked up the phone, and you were breathing hard. And I go, what are you working on? You go, do you have FaceTime? And immediately my phone clicks over to a shirtless live stream of you. Why would you do that?
Well, I knew that we had a certain window, but so let's be honest. We had a certain window last night where we needed to chat. It was important stuff.
You're trying it was to very
some
important.
Planning. It was very important. And I knew that you only had a certain window. And if I didn't pick up then, I was in the midst of doing my wind sprints and putting my work in. I'm like, if I don't pick up now, we're going to miss this window. So, you know, that thought crossed my mind. Do I pick up now shirtless, sweaty, breathing hard and let him know what's going on? Or do I miss his call when we had been texting and then I look like I'm going to uninvite you for back-to-back weeks? And
I appreciate and respect all of that. Why would your thought be, let's go to FaceTime so I can be shirtless on this conversation?
So
that didn't make any sense to me.
No, let's be fair. You didn't see nipple. I mean, it was only from, like, you know, upper chest up. So, I mean, to act like I'm giving you a full exposure of the pecs and the abs, that's not fair. I mean, it was upper sternum to sweaty face. And, you know, I just thought I could encourage you to maybe get out there and get your sweat on and get your heart rate up. That's all.
Oh, okay. So it was just a little bit of encouragement for me. That was
To be shirtless. To be shirtless, you do have to be fair. Come on. To be truly shirtless, you got to see me, like, nipple down. Because I could have been in a tank top, and you wouldn't have known
that
from the shot I was in.
Yeah, okay. All right. Whatever. So I was talking in my opening monologue today, and this is something you and I have talked about a lot because you're a very smart man. You know, whether you're preparing for a football broadcast or looking at life, you look at data, and you've had a lot of questions about the whole shutdown of our economy. And I just wonder what is going to happen after we've had tens of thousands of people in the street. I mean, they told us we couldn't walk within 6 feet of each other in a park 2 weeks ago. They were telling us that. And now there are tens of thousands who are, you know, shoulder to shoulder downtown. And I'm wondering, are we either going to have a huge spike in coronavirus, in which case then they've tolerated something that they said they would not tolerate for social gatherings? Or is there going to be no spike, which would suggest that maybe a lot of what we've been told the last 3 months hasn't been truthful?
Yeah, I got two things on that, Dory. I've been thinking a lot about it, because I think when you start talking about shutting down the economy, and you're right on that, people immediately switch in their brain to you just care more about material things and money. And I think that's reckless and dangerous, and I think that's rather misguided. But I think a better way to phrase this is to shut down purpose. We've shut down people's purpose in life, not just their economy, but what they love to do, what they're passionate about. You know, ultimately, you have found something, Dory, that you love to do. And whether you're getting paid handsomely after 30 years of doing it, or when you started out making peanuts and eating hot dogs in the kingdom to survive, you knew it was your purpose. And I think we are seeing, on top of such massive racial injustice and pain and hurt and brokenness,
sure.
That is all there. We are also feeling the backlash of people whose purpose for the last 3 months has been taken away. Not the economy, but their purpose, their skill sets, their talents to be locked in. And, you know, I've gotten into a lot of these conversations, and it's very easy to just talk about the dollars and cents and the economy of it. And that is all justified. But I think where I land in a more healthy debate is, you know, look what happens when you strip people of their talent and their purpose in life. We are seeing that, I think, also come out in display. And to answer the question about the gatherings, we have seen gatherings in Texas and Florida and Georgia. We didn't see them over 2 weeks, Dory. We've seen them for a month and a half. And what does that data suggest?
Right.
What does that data suggest in those states? Why is the mayor of L.A. 1 week ago sitting in Dodger Stadium with a mask on and nobody around, and yesterday he's at a rally with thousands and thousands of thousands unmasked, like many of the protesters around him? Right. I mean, I think those are very legitimate and fair questions. But yes, I think getting people back to their purpose and maximizing their talents is a big part of the next step.
Yeah, I do, too. And I have talked about that this week, that I think part of what we are seeing in all of the destruction, you know, the people who have hijacked the peaceful protesters who have a righteous message. But with all the destruction, I have wondered if the fact that we have, you know, record levels of anxiety and depression and, you know, just all the problems that come with not being what we genuinely are, and that social creatures, and we've been sitting inside of four walls for months, and I just wondered to what extent that's contributed to some of the horrible things we've seen this last few days.
And again, Dory, I think that swings both ways. I think that is accurate and fair, and then on the positive, if I were to look at that positively, I would say, you know what? People have gathered for a cause, for a righteous cause. Yeah. And they feel what it's like again to have that social capital, to feel what it's like to be with people again, right? To feel what it's like to have that energy of others to pour into and to, you know, to find a purpose. And, you know, there is a very redeeming purpose to these protests and something that you feel in the heart of people. And that is being expressed. And on top of it, you're gathering and you're doing what we love to do as humans. Right. We love to gather. We love to have, you know, that is why, frankly, about a month ago, when you and I kind of shifted to more of these deeper conversations other than just sports.
Right.
What did I tell you, man? It was about the kids. It was about the youth. It was about the young people who learn more at recess and at lunchtime and in the library and in conversations than they do simple just arithmetic. They need one another. And I think you're feeling that in these protests as well.
Yeah, no, it's really been sad to watch how things have devolved around here. One thing I did want to mention, you sent out your coach when you were playing with Peyton Manning in Indy, Tony Dungy, who I have observed, but you have told me is just a great, great man. And I would encourage everybody, you know, whether it's via his Twitter or your Twitter, to check out his words, because they're some of the more beautiful that I've seen in the wake of all of this madness.
Yeah, and can I also just say, and I guess, you know, self-promote, Nora, but I did a podcast, one of my early Above and Beyond podcasts a couple years ago was with Coach Dungy. And I think this. Yeah, and I think the first one I did was with Matt Hasselbeck, a dear friend of mine. And I want to say either the second or third that I did when we started that 3 years ago was with Coach Dungy. And I remember finishing that podcast thinking, wow, this is going to be an amazing platform because it's the intersection of faith and sports. But it really is just a deep dive into people's, again, conviction and purpose in their life. And Coach Dungy speaks explicitly about the racism that he dealt with, that his father dealt with, that he lived with, losing a sports position battle, the hatred at his school, and how he dealt with that as a young person. It's a pretty incredible podcast, and you know, it does speak to his heart. You know, we I think many of us know Coach Dungy from afar and watched him on the sidelines and listening to him. But that podcast in particular is a pretty deep dive that is so relatable to the pain and hardship we're watching in front of our eyes these days.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you reminded me of that. I'm going to listen to it again. I had forgotten about that until you just mentioned it. So, yeah, you can access all of Brock's Above and Beyond podcast. And every one of them is archived, right? At the the website, My North
Above and Beyond podcast, Yep, and aboveandbeyondpodcast.com. You can just go there, and, yeah, you can look at all the different years. But he specifically on race, what he learns, what his dad taught him, how he fought through that through high school and college and ultimately into the NFL, where he became the first African-American coach to hoist the Lombardi Trophy and win the Super Bowl. A pretty inspiring story.
Yeah, no, he's an amazing man, and I know you're very blessed to have been personally touched by him. All right, Brock, wonderful stuff as always. Great talking with you, and looking forward to it in the days to come.
And answer that fence time later tonight. We got a little more for you.
Think I'm busy tonight. Sorry, but I appreciate the offer. All right, thanks, Brock.
See you, bud.
Brock Heward every Wednesday. We have lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Topless. You know, the 4th of July is a national holiday, and understandably so. It is our nation's Independence Day. Hey, do me a favor. Go back and read the Declaration of Independence with your kid this weekend, or kids. I'm serious. Now more than ever, when there are all these powerful forces that want to cancel history and demonize the people who helped form the greatest nation in the history of mankind. Can I still say that without getting canceled? Is the cancel culture going to go after me because I actually still really love America? You're not supposed to verbalize that. It's triggering to some people. But I do. I love our country. Go read those founding documents. And I didn't even get to my main point. I'll make my main point some other time. Even when I'm recording stuff for a holiday version of the show, I can't stay on track. Okay, glad you're with us. Enjoy some of our favorite segments here on the Dory Monson Show.